financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham. Hi.
Hey, Jess. How are you this morning?
I'm good. This was the dreaded tax week.
Oh, every year, right? Yeah, it's true. And, you know, you see ads on the TV about identity theft protection and tax identity fraud. And what is that? And I've had calls already this year. I can't believe it. But calls already this year from people who couldn't file their tax return or who got erroneous information asking them for their personal information or their financial information, saying they were from the IRS. You would think if you're a scam artist, you might take on somebody other than the IRS.
Yeah, but that's not a good adversary, I wouldn't think.
Well, it's not where I would go, yeah. But if I were a fraudulent person, I guess. But interestingly enough, maybe some of the reason that people are looking at this and creating more and more fraud is that, you know, the IRS used to resolve these cases in about 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
But since the pandemic, when fraudsters had nothing to do but sit home and try and get your tax refund from you. Guess how long it's taking them now? Just take a stab.
A year.
650 days on average.
Wow. So almost 2 years.
650 days. They're working to get it back to 120 days, but they're just overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And what that tells me is people are falling prey to it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be overwhelmed. People would just say, oh, you know, I didn't file that tax return, and that would be it. But in the case of the IRS, it isn't like saying, it's not like calling your bank up and saying, I didn't make that charge, or your credit card company. I didn't make that charge. Okay, that's it. We'll stamp your account and you'll be done. You're not responsible for it. With identity theft, tax fraud, what happens is somebody steals your personal information, your name, your address, and your social security number. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, it's out there everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can say, I don't want to give up my social security number, but for those of us old enough to remember when it was on our driver's license, we know it's everywhere. So they get your information and they file a tax refund, a tax report. Well, why wouldn't they file your taxes? They're asking for a refund.
How are they setting this up, though? They're setting it up where it goes to, where the refund would go to their account?
Yes.
And then I'm assuming that these are accounts that kind of go away quickly so they can't be traced, or how does that work?
One would assume.
Yeah.
So I always get nervous when I'm talking about fraud on the air, because it drives me crazy when I see people telling them how it works. Why don't we just give them a playbook, folks? Here's how to build a bomb with parts you buy on the internet, you know? So let's not tell them exactly how it works.
Okay.
But what I do care about is how to protect yourself from it and what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're even going to know that somebody did this.
Yeah.
How do you know if somebody... Yeah.
I would assume you wouldn't find out until you just didn't get your return back, right?
Almost. You might find out very early. You might be trying to e-file. And if you're trying to e-file and it comes up as you can't because it's a duplicate social security number.
Then you kind of have
I'm reminded of that. I'm reminded of the redneck. You might be a redneck if, right? I mean, the comedian, you might be a redneck if.
Jeff Fox.
Yes, if you can't file your tax return by e-file because it says you have a duplicate social security number, you might be an identity tax fraud victim.
Mm.
You might have gotten a letter from the IRS that said that they're wondering if they've got a return in and they're wondering if it's really you that filed it because there's something that seems suspicious about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be some things like that happen. Of course, you might file successfully and be wondering where your refund is and contact them. And they say, oh, well, we sent your refund somewhere else. The two people that I've had ask me about it in the last week and a half, two people in a week and a half is a lot in a practice our size, right? To be falling prey to this. They both said that they went to file their returns. One was at, I think, an H&R Block and the other was at another private accountant firm. And they couldn't file. When they put the return into the system, it was rejected because there was a social security number duplication or the return had already been filed.
I can imagine it's a complete nightmare to get that fixed.
It is a complete nightmare, I think. You know, there's what will happen is the IRS will ask you to fill out a form 14039 or 14039B because they all have lovely numbers like that. And that's tagging your account as an identity theft victim, right? It says, here's my affidavit. It's an affidavit. It says, here's my affidavit that I did not file that fraudulent return that you have in your hands. Please fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will connect you with an identity theft organization who have specially trained employees who will help you unravel this, right? Resolve this matter. And so first thing you'll have to do is verify your information, right? They're not going to do anything if you just contact the IRS and say, I didn't make that tax return. It's really me now, because they don't know the difference between whether it was really you the first time or it's really you now, until you verify your information. And that might require having a photo ID, a copy of the letter, your last year's tax return, if you filed one, and the return in order that's in question, right? Is this your, here's the return I'm saying I filed. What do you have in your hands? You know, no, that's not me. I didn't have an account in Colorado. Or what do you mean? You're processing my refund and I'm out of the country. No, it's not me. I'm really here.
Is this something that you can do over the phone, or should you go into an office? Because I can imagine if you've already gotten your identity stolen, you're going to feel a little nervous about giving that info out over the phone.
Yeah, it could happen either way. You may be able to do it online or with an IRS agent, or they may, if under certain suspicious circumstances, particularly if you can't verify quickly with the information they're asking you for, they'll ask you to go into a center in person and verify there. And there they'll make you bring a picture ID and some other things to identify yourself. So once you've verified yourself, now you can tell them, finally, you can tell them, yes, I made this, I filed this return, or no, I didn't file this return. If you did file the return, let's say you got a letter from the IRS and it said, we have a return in hand and we think it's suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
It might be for a number of reasons. Maybe you've changed an address. Maybe something didn't match up with their records, but they might think it's suspicious and they've contacted you. Then if it is you and you can verify yourself and say, yes, I've done this, then they can say, okay, we're going to continue to process your return. But if it's not you, then they're going to take a number of steps. They're going to mark your account as identity theft for an identity theft victim. They're going to ask you to fill out that 14039 or 14039B fraud affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try and unravel where this return came from and attack the bad guys if they can. And they're going to help you file your correct return safely, right? So that's what they're looking to do, and get your refund if you do a refund.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so if they have not tracked down the money, because we know that these hackers move quickly, do you have to wait till they get your money back, or they have a system where you will get paid because it wasn't you, and then they recover that separately?
Yeah, I think that you get paid and then they recover it separately. But I don't have the specific details of what the IRS, how the IRS works, in part because it's taking them almost 2 years to unravel this. So the cases that I know of personally, the people were caught in time because they couldn't file their return because somebody else had already filed with their information.
It would be a nightmare if this happened and you had to wait the 2 years that it's taking them to unravel it to even see anything, especially if you were due money back.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's really scary. But getting the refund, believe it or not, is the smallest of people's problems.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that your identity has been stolen and it's been used to file a tax return with the hopes of getting your refund, when somebody's that bold and they've got your information,
they've probably already opened credit cards and everything else. Yeah.
It's really scary, you know, what you can do about it. And we'll talk about all the things you can do to protect yourself from this. But basically, once you notify the IRS, they're going to put people on it and say, okay, now we have to figure out, is it just this tax year or is it multiple tax years?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just you? Oh, yeah. Oh, it could be really big, right? It could be going back for years. And you maybe, let's say you didn't earn enough money to file. Mm-hmm. Let's say you just said, I don't have to file my return.
Okay.
But somebody else did. You might not discover it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Until you finally made enough money to file a return. And there's a lot of people out there who don't have to file, especially retirees, right? They are under an income level, whatever.
Right.
So finally something happens, they get a big windfall and they file a return and this mess starts to happen. I can't get your refund for you because there's a fraudulent case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now the IRS is looking at how many years did it go back, and they've got to unravel that. It also could include more people than just you. Maybe there are other people named on your, on the tax return. Maybe there's a spouse or somebody else named on that tax return. And so they have to try to figure that out. And mm-hmm. is that person real or not? In the case of some couples who might be estranged, let's say, right? Maybe one person has all that information on the other person and they're mm-hmm. filing tax returns because they know the other person doesn't need to file and they're collecting their refunds. So half of the information on the return might be legitimate and the other half might not. Mm-hmm. So what a disaster to try to sort this out. And what are the kinds of things you can do, which we will. I'll give people a roadmap to this about where you can go for help and what you can do. But there is definitely help ready for you, both at the IRS and at the state level. But, you know, the first place to start with this sort of thing, I think, is to really use best practices and anti-theft software on your computer and just be cautious about how you're doing things. And for those people out there who are old school and who are saying, you see, that's why I never e-file. I always send my return in by paper. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to give you a nod on this one. Personally, I actually e-file, but I have great identity theft protection, right? And that's what you want to have in place. But if you're nervous about this at all, send it in by paper. What's the harm in doing that? Other yeah. than, you know, you got to yeah. get it stamped on time, right? So yeah, scary thing. And it's in the news a lot right now. So I thought we should talk about it. And in the second half, we'll talk about all the steps that people can take to protect themselves and where they can go to get help.
Okay, yeah. Let's get your phone number first.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to info@hugyourmoney.com. Check that out there. We'll be right back with the second half of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP. When it comes to investing, we're taught the higher the risk, the better the reward. Frances Ram, the Money Doctor, says it isn't necessarily true. We need to remember that with risk comes the potential for losses, and making up losses can set us back, or worse, delay our retirement. You've heard the testimonials for years about how her patented program helps people become 100% debt-free far ahead of schedule. But did you know that for more than 35 years, Dr. Ram has been helping people retire well without unnecessary risk? Dr. Ram says most people mistakenly accept that in order to earn attractive interest rates, they must tolerate risk, and that choosing safety means settling for lackluster returns. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can earn competitive rates and minimize taxes without risking a single dollar of your hard-earned savings. Contact the Money Doctor at Hug Your Money for a free consultation. Call 413-773-3333 or visit hugyourmoney.com. Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Got your tax refund yet?
I mean, we're talking about two things that are not that great. Already, if it's tax week for you, that means that you waited to the last minute. So you've been putting it off.
Yes.
And then on top of that, we're talking about somebody maybe filing fraudulently in your place, which just seems like a complete nightmare if that happens.
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, I know that a lot of people who wait till the last minute are not expecting a refund. They wait till the last minute because they know they're going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. But when you've waited to the last minute and you log in and you try to e-file your return, and it's, you know, I don't know, 11:30 on the night before, mm-hmm. and you're there ready to push the button, and you push the button and it says you can't file your return.
Right.
There's some reason you can't do it. They can't verify your identity. There's been an additional return already filed with your social security number. What are you going to do? So yes, you have to contact the IRS right away. But once you file that form that we talked about, that affidavit that says, I didn't file this return, this 14039 form or 14039B, mm-hmm. what do you do? It's going to take 650 days on average for the IRS to sort this out now. Used to be 120 days. Pandemic put us there. And we're trying to get back to 120 days for the IRS to resolve these matters. But even 120 days is still a long time for you to say, what am I going to do about my tax refund?
Right.
So the first thing you absolutely have to do is you have to file your return. If you have to put it in paper in the mail, so be it. But file your regular return, even if you can't file online. Mm-hmm. Okay. And continue to pay your taxes as you normally would. I know it's scary when somebody else has your identity, but the IRS expects that you will just continue business as usual and that you'll trust that they'll
sort
it out.
Yeah. Okay.
Quickly, right?
You couldn't get through that sentence.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the ways that people find out about this is not just that you can't file your return. you might get a transcript in the mail from the IRS. Here's a transcript of a phone conversation we had. Mm-hmm. You didn't request it. You might get an online notice that an account has been created in your name mm-hmm. and you didn't create one, or that your account has been disabled and you didn't disable it.
So these are all red flags.
These are immediate. You have to wonder, has something been done? You might get a notice that there's been an additional tax or refund, that additional tax that you owe, or a refund that you're due when you don't think that there is, mm-hmm. or there might be a collection action on a year you didn't file. So you get scary letters from the IRS that say things like, you know, we're trying to collect these taxes from you. And you're saying, wait a minute, did I even file a return for that year?
Yeah. Let's flash back for one second to the form, the 1049AB. I probably got
14.
That all wrong. You know what I'm saying.
14039, yes.
I have had the pleasure of calling the IRS before for a tax issue. It's not quick. Yeah. Is there a quick way to get this form? Because normally it's so backed up now to call anyway, then you're put on hold, then you got to go, you know how it is.
I do. It feels like 650 days to be on hold.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you got to call on the right day and everything else. So is there a quick way?
And is there anything worse than having to listen to that recording over and over again, or that, or the bad music, right?
Yeah. The worst is when you get partway through the thing and then you get disconnected somehow and you have to start again.
Oh my gosh. It's so common. And you mm-hmm. wait and you wait like an hour and then click, you know, or you get, thank you for calling, and they hang up on you, or they transfer you and there's just dead air and mm-hmm. you don't know whether there's really a person there or not. I could go on and on about the headaches of this, but for anybody who has ever called, not just the IRS, anybody who's ever called someplace. Yeah. These days, terrible. So yes, you may be able to fill it out online.
Okay.
We hope.
Maybe we just saved somebody an hour on hold. So I feel good about that.
Oh my gosh. I hope so. Yeah. Thank you very much for mentioning that. Absolutely. And, you know, in addition to the kinds of things that we talked about where, you know, an individual might get hit by this and become a victim, companies can do it too. You know, one of the ways that you might realize that you're an identity tax fraud victim mm-hmm. is that you might get notice that you've created an EIN, an employee identification number, that you didn't ask for or that isn't yours, and suddenly your name is attached to it. So if anything like this happens, you really want to check with the IRS. Now, the IRS, the state, and the tax industry work together in cooperation under something called the Security Summit to protect your information going forward. So, you know, I don't know, that sounds like a nice thing to do, to go to the Security Summit, but I don't think you really want to find yourself there if you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the IRS will never, these are the things that you need to know to protect yourself. The IRS will never initiate contact with you through text, phone, email, social media. If the IRS has a problem with you, they will send you a letter. Done deal. That's it. So be aware of phishing scams with a PH, right? Be aware of phishing scams. Oh, the other thing they won't do that is really, really gets people, and right now I'm hearing, you know, murmurs of this, is they'll get a phone call. People will get a phone call mm-hmm. with a threat of a lawsuit. And it's always scary. I'm calling you from the IRS and we have your return in our hand. And if you don't pay up, or we have questions, we're coming to your house to discuss them, right? You know, phone calls, right? Oh, you don't want us to come to your house? Well, here's what you can do. Just send the money in to resolve this. Mm-hmm. And here, let me tell you where to send it. And it'll be someplace that sounds legit and isn't. Somebody might call you and say they're working with the IRS. They're part of an organization that has been hired by the IRS. Mm-hmm. They're working with them and they just want you to help them. The IRS may be the one to tell you that they have the return in their hand that's suspicious. Mm-hmm. And if they do, it's probably more quickly resolved than if you tell them that you think there's a suspicious return filed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the times it's people that realize, as we've said, that there's a suspicious return that's been filed, and what can they do about it?
Yeah. I know we've talked about this before, and we've talked on a previous show about this, but I was wondering if we could just maybe get like a little refresher. Like, we're talking about this and specifically having to do with the tax return, but we talk all the time about these fraudsters doing all this stuff. And I just heard a news story recently, and I hear these all the time, about AT&T customers getting breached. So when we have to do regular business, like have a phone service or all these other places that this has happened to, how do we protect ourselves in those cases?
You know, it isn't even that you've given up your Social Security. Some of these fraudsters will get a fresh Social Security number on a child mm-hmm. that been born and you haven't registered for a social security number yet, and they've got 18 years to use their kid's credit before you're going to discover it when they go to get a car loan or something. So how do you protect yourself from it? There are identity theft companies that claim to protect your identity. I'm not going to say they can't do it. But what I tell people is the most important part about protecting yourself is putting that lock on your credit reports so people can't take out loans in your name. Mm-hmm. That's where it gets really ugly. It's one thing to tell the IRS, hey, somebody's trying to get my refund. It's another to try to prove that you didn't take out a mortgage when they've got a signature and all your information on their paper.
Right.
So to do that, I ask people to put a fraud alert on their credit reports or a freeze on their credit reports. You could do either. I recommend a freeze if you think you've been a victim of identity theft. And that just locks down all your credit reports. And you can go to Equifax.com and be able to do it there. TransUnion, Experian, those are the three largest ones. And you can get, you can just put a block on your credit report. Now you can unlock that anytime you want. Let's say you want to go buy a car and they need to check your credit. You can just unlock it through your phone or with a phone call, and then they can get your credit report. Then you just put the lock back on it again. But that will save you from a lot of headaches. In fact, one of the gentlemen that called me about the identity theft for tax reasons had not been told to lock down his credit report. And it was like, seriously? Mm-hmm. Somebody has filed a whole tax return in your name and nobody said, maybe you want to check your credit reports.
Yeah.
So I'm really shocked by that. And the problem is that credit reports take, 45 days before things cycle through. So you may not know. You can pull your credit report right now and it looks great. And 45, 60 days from now, it's got a new loan on it.
Right.
So check with that. Annualcreditreport.com is the place that I recommend that people go to get their credit reports. I think that's really important to realize and to recognize that you can do a lot of things to protect yourself. It might not protect a duplicate tax return, but you do what you can. Also, anti-theft software on your computer. If you're going to shop on the internet, so here's a thing I don't think I've ever talked about on the air. And as you know, I don't usually recommend places. I'm sure there are a million like this, but I have used this many times personally to protect my own identity online. And it's called Email on Deck. Now, there's probably a bunch of these.
Okay.
But the way it works is you go there, you click a couple buttons to say that you're not a robot, and they give you an email address. It's very temporary. It's only going to be alive for about 15 minutes. And you get this email address. And so you can use it when you're shopping somewhere, right? Hey, I'm, 123 at gmail.com. And use it to finish your order. You'll get your receipt at the fake email address, right? Because you'll be able to log right back into wherever it was, in this case, Email on Deck. Mm-hmm. Get the email, verify, they'll give you a code to verify it's you. You don't have to give out your legitimate email to do that. As long as you don't need this long term, you could use one of those fake email addresses. And I think there are services that create these email addresses as well automatically for you. I've gotten ads from them, So you can use that fake email address just to finish that transaction, and then poof, it's gone in 15 minutes.
How much can you trust, when you're doing online shopping and you see different sites where they're like, we have secure payments, how much can you trust that? Is that just something that everyone says, kind of like it's fat-free, or is it something where there's some protection with it?
Well, the first thing to look for is in the address bar. Check and see if after HTTP, if there's the letter S.
Okay.
S is for secure.
Okay.
S is a secure. So that means they have an SSL certificate or a secure socket layer certificate. You got me into tech world now. So that means they have an SSL on it. So it's protected. If you go to our website, anytime we're asking for anything, and we don't even ask for a lot of sensitive information, you'll see that you're at an https://www address.
Okay.
And so that's the first thing to look for. Some companies will offer, security under, we have this badge of security or whatever. But I would say the very first thing is to look at that internet address bar, because if that's not secure, then any information you're sending through the internet is going wherever the internet is going and whoever can intercept it. Now, it doesn't mean that when you land on their site, it has to be secure. But when you get to a place where you're putting in your credit card information or you're putting your personal information in, that part should absolutely be secure. Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question that I had for you, I don't know if this is a question or an observation, but I've seen this and just covering some news stories where family members will take your social security number and use it. And then that's probably a whole other nightmare that you've got to unravel, right? Because it's a family member with the same last name, but you didn't give permission. So that's got to be a nightmare as well.
Yeah. Well, I think emotionally that would be the worst, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's pretty bad to be violated by a stranger, but to have your return stolen from you by a family member, that's really weird. And I would hazard a guess that a lot of those don't get reported.
Yeah, I've recently saw a story about it was parents that had done it. And when the girl was 18 and went to go get loans, she realized that her parents had wrecked her credit. And I think that they were good people, but they were financially sloppy and used that to kind of get by. And then they don't realize the damage that does to her starting out.
Oh, my gosh, that's a creepy one.
Yeah,
that's really terrible. Well, I would say that, you know, the thing that you need to remember about unraveling this sort of thing is you could follow the IRS model, for instance. Once they get this resolved, then they tag your account as an identity theft victim. They put stronger security on things. Yes, you might have to file a paper return if you've not already filed your return. Mm-hmm. Yes, you might have to go into an office in person to prove it's you. But you know what? After they get this done, they'll process your return normally. You'll get your refund normally. And after all, this is for your protection.
Yeah.
So if it's a little bit of an inconvenience, you know, so be it. I mean, this probably the strongest thing that they do after they have figured out that you've been a victim of fraud is that in certain cases, certain identity theft victims will have to get a new annual 6-digit PIN in order to file. Oh, okay. And the IRS will give it to you every year. So they're protecting you. Every year, the PIN is different.
That's another PIN I've got to remember.
Yeah, it's another PIN. They're terrible, all these things. But they are there for your protection.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is scary. I know there are people who say, I don't want a smartphone. I don't want to be on the internet. This is why. This is a big headache. You know what? They're right. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's a choice. And most of us don't really have the choice. Most of us are forced into, hey, if you aren't here, particularly those of us in business, if you aren't on the internet, if you don't have a website, if you don't do business digitally, you are going to be very limited.
Yeah.
Very limited.
Yeah. There's so many things you have to do online now.
My hat's off to the small restaurants who still remain cash positive or cash only,
yeah.
you know, and they have their own problems too. But yeah, this is a bad one because it really makes a mess of your tax situation. And so I hope that this information is helpful to somebody. There are lots of things you can do to protect yourself, but there's a great list of them at irs.gov, mm-hmm. Which I would say it's a short read, but it's, you know, they've really got some concise things there with active links. You could just click on a link and read more about how to protect yourself.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect.
For sure.
Let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions or they have a tax problem.
Oh, dear.
I'm so kind.
Sympathy to you first, and yes, we would help you sort it out. Mm-hmm. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or go to info@hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ryan, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
He's not one to want anybody to know his business. Don't tell anybody about money. Don't say anything about money. But the bottom line is, because he had that secrecy from his youth, I felt like, who do I get help from? I have to tell somebody. Oh no, he'll be furious, so keep it to yourself, Jill.
That's very true. But as bad as it was getting, she told me about Hug Your Money. I said, you know, we need to do it. It was hard. It was hard because I said the same word all the time. I was embarrassed. We were just talking about that earlier today. I'm not embarrassed anymore. I'm relieved. I'm so happy. Today is wonderful.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rayum.
to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rayum. Hello.
Well, hello, Jess. How's it going?
It's good. We are back for another week of Money Talk. What are we talking about this week?
We are. Well, let's talk about mortgages this week, but not mortgage rates, but how many people are holding their mortgage or even using it as an investment tool into their retirement years past age 65.
Okay.
Yeah. I bristle just having to say that you have a mortgage past age 65, but so many people do.
Well,
it's
longer before you can afford your first house with how much they are right now. And then you talk 30, 40 year mortgage. If you refinance, you very well could have a mortgage that old or not that old at that age, I should say.
Yeah, well, the mortgage would be that old too. Yeah. Can you even believe that we are saying 40-year mortgages these days?
Yeah, well, you have to be able to afford the house.
Yeah, that's the sad truth is that, and they've been doing this in California for a while now, when house prices just were unaffordable. People can't make the payment. You can't sell the houses. You can't lend to them. What do? Stretch out the term. So that's kind of a similar thing as to what's going on for retirees these days, except that they're doing it in some cases proactively. And I'll give credit here to the New York Times, who had a great article on this. And they really saw both sides of the coin here, what some advisors say you should do and what others say you should do, right? They're completely different. So it might not be any surprise to you that I'm in the camp of, no, don't keep your debt into retirement.
Really? I thought it was going to be the other way for sure.
Well, you know, of course, the reason I say that is because, you know, if you have to pay $1,000, $2,000 a month in a mortgage in retirement, that's all money that's being depleted from your retirement nest egg.
Do you think that people go into a 40-year mortgage, though, thinking that they're going to be able to pay double to get it paid off quicker? They're just like, I'll take it for now, but I'll pay more because they think they're going to be making more?
Maybe. I mean, there are two sides to that coin also. A lot of times people will push themselves into a 15-year mortgage saying that they don't want to have it at retirement or they don't want to have it for longer than 15 years. And so they take that higher payment to get rid of the debt in 15 years. And there's nothing wrong with that if you can afford it easily. But because of our program, because of the way that we see people pay off all their debt, including their mortgage, right, in less than 10 years, usually around 8 years for our average client, because we see it that way, because I see it that way differently now than I used to, I would say to most clients, look, if the interest rates are similar, they don't have to be the same, but if they're similar, you might want to take the 30-year mortgage and keep that payment low so that you don't box yourself into a higher payment in case something happens in the future. I don't know about you, but my crystal ball doesn't stretch out 30 years. You know, so, a lot of stuff's going to happen.
Tricky question for you. So if you have enough money to be able to take out a 15-year mortgage to be able to make that payment comfortably, would you be better off taking off a 30-year and then just paying it off quicker because it's going to make your credit better and would that be a better way to go?
I'm going to say only if you're doing something like our program, which patented. So I don't know if there's something like our program out there, but if you're doing something like this, where we are managing all of the debt together and accelerating those payoff schedules drastically, then I do recommend that very often because people can take that lower payment, put it in the system, and as we start to pay off their other debts and focus on cash reserves and retirement, that money from those other creditors that you don't owe any longer can start going to your mortgage. So you're not sending any more out monthly. You're used to that monthly outlay already. But at some point, your mortgage becomes a priority debt and gets paid off ahead of schedule.
Okay.
So you still have a similar effect if you follow the plan, but that's true of anything. If you follow the plan of paying your 15-year mortgage, right? But when people do it artificially, what they tend to think of is, okay, I'm going to make double payments or I'm going to make an extra payment. I'm going to pay it biweekly because that's one extra payment a year. Those things are effective. There's no arguing that it's effective to pay off your debt early. It's just, what is the smartest way to do it? How can you do it with the least amount of pain and the quickest way possible? And that's what I'm looking for people because, yes, you take out your mortgage now, but you know what? There's going to be expenses. There's going to be job losses, health problems, children growing up, going to college, marriages, unexpected car expenses. Your washing machine is going to break. Everything is going to happen.
Well, and as a new homeowner, you know, there's going to be home expenses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And taxes are going to continue to do what?
Well, they aren't going down.
They aren't going down, folks. So taxes will go up. Cost of living will go up. Your insurances, all of that, they're all going to be on the rise. Mm-hmm. And as your house continues to rise in value, as we hope it does, we don't plan for it, but we hope it does. Guess what's going up with it? Your taxes and your insurance rates.
Mm-hmm.
So for a retiree who hasn't thought of that, let's say you're age 65, you're retiring and you're thinking, boy, I've got a great way to get the money out of my house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to refinance my house, pull a bunch of cash out. I'll just make the mortgage payment. I won't ever plan to pay that mortgage off. I'll just tolerate it through my retirement years. Guess what happens? It looks good on paper now, but next year your taxes go up. The year mm-hmm. after that, your insurance goes up. Your cost of living rises. So that math that you did, that quick and dirty math that you did that said, wow, this is a great idea. It looks good now, but what does it look like 10 years forward, 5 mm-hmm. years forward, 15 years forward? And what does it look like if you plan to leave your home to your children and now it's mortgaged to the hilt?
Mm-hmm.
That's just the beginning of the rub. Now, there are lots of financial advisors out there, I believe, that are saying, do this. And the reason they're saying, do this, I'm not blaming them. I hate to say it, but they don't know what we know yet, right? I didn't know what we know yet 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right? So without knowing how to accelerate your debt payoff and balance that cash reserve and retirement picture without really doing a comprehensive picture, what most financial advisors are trained to do, myself included prior to inventing this system, is to look at how much are you paying on your debt? How much are you earning in the market? Oh, well, gee, you're paying 3% on your wonderful mortgage that you got a year or two ago,
mm-hmm.
and you're making 6% in the market. It doesn't make any sense to take your assets out and pay off your mortgage. So we're just going to tell you to keep your mortgage and make the payment because we're always going to earn more than 3% in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while that might be true, it might not be true. And in order to count on that, you have to take very conservative investments in order to rely on the fact that the market will out-earn your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that these markets are moving all the time.
Right.
And that would mean that you take very conservative investments. In other words, maybe a CD or a treasury bill. Well, that might not align with your 30-year mortgage, right? You might get that for 5 years, but not 30.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at the end of 5 years if those rates go down and now they're paying 2% or 1% like they were not all that long ago and your mortgage is at 3? That mortgage doesn't look so appealing any longer.
So are you saying that it's always better to pay off the mortgage first rather than let that money stay in the market? Or it depends on the situation?
How long have you known me, Jess? Yes, I have never always said anything. I'm certainly not wishy-washy about this. If you can afford to pay your mortgage off, I believe it's a better thing for people to go into retirement debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it emotional comfort if you want to, but I've just seen way too many people who are carrying debt into their retirement years, thought it was going to be just great, and something happened. Even as simple as we had to help our kids out. Our kids were faced with, you know, they're going to live in the street if we didn't pay their rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you don't plan that into retirement, but you can't do it if you're saddled with that mortgage.
Huh. All right. So, but about refinancing, should that always be a last resort for refinancing?
Oh, no, I don't think it's a last resort. I think there are times that refinancing makes sense. Just maybe not as a strategy to get through retirement all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a good example. Somebody's got one of the mortgages they get today at 8.25% or whatever the rates are now,
yeah.
whatever the ugly rates are today. And, you know, they take it because they've got a downsize, for instance, and they decide they're going to keep, we're talking about retirees now. So they decide they're going to keep their money in their brokerage account or their assets liquid enough in case they need it, rather than put it on the down payment of a house. So they downsize, they get a new mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, maybe with the help of an advisor, maybe not, it's a good idea to just do it this way and only pay the mortgage payment without any idea of ever paying the mortgage off. And 2 years from now, the rates are at 3%. Do you refinance? Probably.
Yeah.
You probably do. You get the better rate. But what you need to remember when you're refinancing, I always try to tell people the one or two things that nobody else is telling them that they just somehow escapes mainstream knowledge. And the thing that you have to remember mostly is, if you ever plan to pay that mortgage off, and I realize some people just accept it. They just say, I'm just going to pay this like rent the rest of my life. But if you ever plan to pay that mortgage off, you need to remember that when you refinance, these loans are front heavy. In other words, the interest is up front. So now, if you've been paying your mortgage for 5 or 10 years and you're finally starting to chip away at the principal, you know, when you get that statement, you look at it and it says X number of dollars to the interest and X number of dollars to the principal. If you're finally starting to make some headway and you refinance, thank you for playing. You're going back,
back to the beginning. Oh, yeah.
Most of your payment is going to be interest again, because that's how the loans are created. That's what the amortization schedules look like. So there's so many things to think of when you're thinking of this. And there are reasons that you might consider doing this. But what I'm trying to make a point of is, I don't think it should be your number one or even at toward the top of your list, retirement strategy. I'm just going to refinance my house, take the cash out, and that's how I'm going to do retirement. If there's any other way for you to do it, and there usually is, there's probably a better plan than just taking your mortgage out and carrying it through retirement, because you think or are told or you hope that the market is always going to out-earn your mortgage rate, because there's so many other factors besides what your investments are earning.
And it's been all over the place. We haven't really been able to tell if it's going to be up, down. It seems like it's been down. Yeah, we're going to talk more about this coming up in the second half. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We haven't mentioned in a while, but I want to mention that if you have a question for the Money Doctor, you can send your question in at info@hugyourmoney.com, or you can send it to me at jtyler@whmp.com. Then if we use your question on the air, you can get a copy of the book.
Retire debt and retire well. You bet. That's my favorite part, is when people write in with questions.
I love it too.
Answer them on the air.
All right. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
I'm not sure if opposites attract, but most couples differ greatly in their views about household finances. I'm Frances Ram, the Money Doctor, with Hug Your Money. Money is a very volatile topic, and most seem to either argue about it or rarely discuss it. A sort of division of labor emerges, one partner becoming the steward of household finances, the other less directly involved. This arrangement may work until a stressor is introduced: college expenses, budgeting issues, impending retirement, etc. That's when sparks can fly. Each person's perspective is quite different, and it's likely only a short-term solution, if any, will arise. The HUG plan presents an easy-to-follow, long-term solution that helps get both partners on the same page, alleviating stress and inspiring them to manage their finances successfully. I'm Frances Ram, the Money Doctor. We now offer advanced tools and financial coaching using our patented system, all under one umbrella. For more information and to schedule your free consultation, visit our website at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and we're talking mortgages.
We are talking mortgages. We're talking mortgages into your retirement years and what that can do for you or not do for you. And so I just want to make the point that we're not talking about reverse mortgages here. A reverse mortgage is where you give up the equity in your home, you sign a contract to a company who then pays you instead of you paying the mortgage, right? They pay you every month, and you are basically spending down the equity in your home.
That's those late night commercials we see, right? We're back on commercials again this week, but the late night commercials you see, I always think they're ripping off the elderly. Is that true or not?
Well, it might be true in some cases, and in some cases, it's a good idea for people. Okay. It depends. So the things you need to know about that is, you know, tell your kids, if they're expecting to inherit your house and you've got a reverse mortgage, they need to be aware that they're going to get in the same week some news that their parents died and that they owe a mortgage in order to access that house again, because that mortgage then has to get paid off. So you're basically racking up debt, but you're doing it with a reverse mortgage.
You're basically leaving it to your kids.
The mortgage, not the house.
And yes. But are the kids responsible for the mortgage, even though they're not on it, if they inherit the house?
Not directly, but somebody has to be responsible for that mortgage. So if the kids want to keep the house, then they have to pay off that mortgage. If they don't care and they sell the house, then the mortgage has to be repaid, right? That's how that company that lent the money got repaid. So those are tricky, but it's not what we're talking about today. But I just wanted to make it clear that when I'm saying don't use a mortgage as your retirement strategy or as your primary retirement strategy, I'm not necessarily talking about reverse mortgages. I'll give you one example of a time when a reverse mortgage might make good sense for someone.
Okay.
Let's say that they don't have any kids, or that their children don't want the house, or they don't need the house. Mm-hmm. And the parents are living on minimal income, and they don't intend to downsize or do anything else. Or even in downsizing. Sometimes people use a reverse mortgage as a way to downsize. Mm-hmm. But then that might be a way for them to gain the equity out of their house, as long as nobody's expecting to get it in the end. Then they get rid of their mortgage because the company takes it over, and the company pays them a monthly payment as a reverse mortgage. Sometimes that can make very good sense for somebody, but I fear that too many people do it when they don't understand it well. And mm-hmm. So when you said, are they ripping people off? Maybe not intentionally, but I think there are plenty of reverse mortgages that are sold to people who maybe had a better or a different solution.
Well, it seems like always when you're in a situation where you're desperate for money, good choices are not made. Like you're just kind of thinking of the only thing that's going to get you money quick.
Yeah. Well, that's true of any kind of choice, not just financial choices. Whenever we're making decisions emotionally and from our gut and under pressure, mm-hmm. under duress.
Are you talking about being hangry?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's yes. one of them. That's a great analogy because, you know, what we eat and how we spend money are very, very much parallel, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I say that about myself. I have this really strong survival instinct in my belly. And so when I get hungry, I really do. When I get hungry, I want food.
Yeah,
I have
you're
to
clear.
Be careful. Yeah, I have to be careful to make sure that I have things on hand that I can eat. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm hungry, but I'm having an apple. Or I'm hungry, but I'm having a salad. And if I don't plan that out in advance, I can tell you honestly, I mean, I'm just, you know, here I am, folks, real human. I'm going to tell you honestly, if I'm hungry and the thing in the kitchen is a chocolate bar, I'm eating it.
Exactly. Right?
So I have to plan in advance. How am I going to manage that? And mm-hmm. the same thing is true about your retirement, right? You have to plan this in advance. The thing is, it should not all be on your shoulders. One of the things that is hardest to do is to make plans when it's your money, mm-hmm. right? That's where a coach or a financial advisor should come into play and be able to help you. But they have to know this stuff. And I don't think we're teaching it to financial advisors. What we're teaching is if you're making this much money in the market, which by the way, I'm probably making money on, and you're paying that much mortgage, gee, it looks pretty close to me, but I'm going to say, let's keep the money in the market because that's your earning power. Mm-hmm. And to a large extent, they're right. Yes, I want to keep the money in the market and have your earning power, but I don't want to do it at the cost of risking your home, which is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, let's suppose you do this. Let's suppose that you think a good retirement strategy is to take out the mortgage on your home, take the cash out, whether you're calling it a home equity line or a first mortgage, it's still secured by your home and mm-hmm. it's still a mortgage. Don't just because it has a different name doesn't mean it's not a mortgage, right? People argue that point a lot with me. No, it's a home equity line. Uh-huh.
Same
it's
thing.
A mortgage. Yeah, well, we used to call them second mortgages and that creeped people out. Mm-hmm. So now we call them HELOCs.
We just put a prettier name on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if that's your plan is to take that money out and you do that, let's suppose it looks good for a couple of years. And then a time rolls around where you had planned to work through retirement. Gee, you love your job. You're not going to sit in a rocking chair. You really are going to keep working. Well, you know what? You might not be in control of that. Mm-hmm. Somebody might say we're downsizing and you don't have a job any longer, or you might run your own business and find out you just can't get the employees to do the work to keep the doors open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You thought you would sell your business and it's not saleable, or you thought you would pass your business to your kids who have no interest in mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you think will happen in retirement. But just as you pointed out, Jess, the hardest time to decide that is when you're in the thick of it, when you can't see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. When you want, you're looking at that retirement day, counting the days, saying, oh, if I check this box, if I move that there, and if I do this, maybe if I refinance my house, I can hit that target day. Oh, I cannot wait to take that vacation and tell my friends mm-hmm. I've retired.
Yeah.
Right. And that looks good for a while. And then these kinds of things happen, like your kids come home from college and say, Mom, Dad, you know, I need a place to stay. I can't afford rent, or I'm getting a divorce, or somebody's spouse dies, mm-hmm. or there's some major event that none of us want to plan for. Somebody gets really ill. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some reason that you can't live where you are. Maybe you're a renter. You're not a person who pays a mortgage and your rent has just gotten astronomically high and you can't qualify for rental assistance or anything and you have to move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a major financial change for you. And speaking of that, some of the people that get hit hardest with this idea about refinancing their mortgage or carrying their mortgage into retirement are people with lower income. Sadly, very often people of color, not always, but the statistics show us that area of people tends to get hit harder with this mm-hmm. because in some way, oddly enough, talk about the things you don't think of, right? They very often don't have the extra money hanging around to keep up their property. So they might not redo their kitchen and redo their bathroom or, you know, make their yard look perfect or whatever, because they're busy just trying to eke out a living. And then the times change, they go to refinance that property or borrow against it, and they have a harder time doing it mm-hmm. because the property value isn't rising at the same level as maybe somebody who had plenty of cash who's done all these things to keep their property up. Mm-hmm. And they have higher expenses to do it, right? A dollar for somebody who barely ekes out a living is a lot harder to come up with than for somebody who has plenty of money.
Right.
So if you have to redo your roof and you have plenty of money, you know, $30,000 is not, you know, you grouse about it for a moment, but you sign the line, dotted line, or you give them the money and you get your roof redone. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who can't afford that, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, you're going to lose money in the end.
Yeah, and turning around and saying, well, I'm going to refinance my house again can be problematic because now it has to pass an appraisal. The bankers have to be happy with it. Maybe it's not in the condition to do that. Mm-hmm. And trying mm-hmm. to argue the case that, well, I want the refinance because I'm going to repair my roof and do this is sometimes hard if your income can't float it. Mm-hmm. So you can mm-hmm. see I'm going in a big circle here, right? But the circle I'm going in is because, boy, I just think it's so sad to put your house at risk in order to retire when there could be a much better way to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine that, you know, your dreams are dashed because something happens in the future, like, I hate to bring this up, but what happens if Social Security has a problem, mm-hmm. right? We all think Social Security is going to last because it's political suicide for it not to.
Right.
But they're doing it already, delaying the years you can retire. They're pretty soon they're going to start delaying how much money you can get out of it. They've already done it for teachers, mm-hmm. right? If you paid into the retirement system for Social Security, but you've taught most of your life, guess what? Thank you very much for the money, right? We're applying that windfall thing to you. So, you know, we cannot expect that stuff to just continue to last on and on and on. And so I think it's really important for people to get all of the details about this and not just see it as what it looks like today mm-hmm. in today's dollars.
I have a question for you. This is a little off topic, but just a financial advisor question, and it could pertain to this. But how much more difficult is it for you when a couple comes in to make these decisions versus a single person? Like, I can't imagine every husband and wife, especially ones that have been together 30, 40 years, or maybe they do, are in agreement on what to do about retirement. Or when it's joint money decisions, it seems like as a financial advisor, you're part marriage counselor, it seems.
Well, I'm not a licensed marriage counselor, but I sure hear a lot of problems. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. It is a different process for people. The couples, most often by the time I talk to them, mm-hmm. have formed some kind of an agreement. They may not be completely on the same page, and sometimes they're very opposite, especially when there's a big age difference, mm-hmm. as is more and more common these days. You know, where one person's ready to retire and the other person is saying, but I'm going to keep working. And one person is saying, but I want to travel. And the other person is saying, but I can't.
Right.
You know, and so there's a lot of finding of middle ground when that happens. And interestingly enough, for single people, you would think that they're just like, hey, I don't have anybody else to worry about, so here's my retirement plan. But interestingly enough, it seems to me that they worry even more. Mm. They don't feel like they have the safety net of a second income.
Oh, that's true.
Very often have children that they want to go and visit or take care of, and it's going to be harder on one income. They sometimes will tell me that part of their retirement plan is that they're going to meet somebody. More often than not, they'll add a fictitious person in the future.
Right.
As part of their retirement plan. Yeah. And this person is always going to be affluent and take care of them. And nobody says, I'm going to meet somebody. They're going to be a deadbeat and they're going to live on my couch and I'm going to have to take care of them too. You know,
the kid's going to be an NFL star.
Children. Yeah, it is a different decision. But I think to answer your question, more and more these days, I see as couples, mm-hmm. I see the people as more and more independent of one another. They're in a unit, they're a team, and they're making decisions together. But, you know, 15 years ago, couples would come in or call me and they would be like, my husband's going to retire and I need to understand how this works because I'm the one who takes care of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be it. You know, sometimes they'd say, well, I have a job too, but I'm not really contributing to anything. Mm-hmm. And even today, we've talked about this, women are not contributing anywhere as much as their male counterparts are.
Into the living expenses every month or into retirement?
No, into their retirement. They tend to see the money in the household as his retirement, with theirs being ancillary. Mm-hmm. And that's hard when a couple splits, right? Or one dies or something happens. So, but what I see is that they talk to me in a more independent way within the marriage unit about, well, she's going to retire then, or I'm going to retire now, or he's going to retire in 5 years, but I'm not going to. And instead of when my husband retires, mm-hmm. this is what life will look like. Now they're both trying to figure it out within the marital context. And so you always ask the most interesting questions. The ones I love come from real people, you know, like you, who aren't financial geeks, who just say, but this is what happens in my life. Does that happen to other people?
Right. Exactly. Well, so much good information here. I know that people probably will have questions. So how can they get a hold of you?
Well, I hope so. They can reach us at 413-773-3333. Or on the web at hugyourmoney.com.
And as we talked about before, I really would love if people send questions in. I do have some questions saved for you. So we're going to do a question show coming up really soon. And then, like we said, if you get one of your questions that get on the air, you answer them, and I go, oh, I knew that. then you're going to get a copy of the book. And the book is kind of, this is a reissue, correct?
It is, actually.
Oh, you have a copy right there, Haley.
I have a copy right here. Look, Retire Debt and Retire Well. And we reissued it because we kept the same stories that everybody loved, but we added retirement information and budget information and more things about what are relevant today. And so retire sooner, live better, debt-free, including your mortgage, which after all was the point today.
Exactly. And so I've got to say, it's such an easy read too. And I love that you kind of dispersed real stories in with the advice because it just made it fun to read.
Well, thank you. Thanks. That was the idea, is that, you know, we call this financial fitness, not, you know, here's how to trade the market, because it's about real people and their real money and being financially fit in your lifestyle.
So if you have a question and you want a chance to win a copy of the book, you can send those questions into info@hugyourmoney.com. You could also send them to me here at jtyler@whmp.com. And you can go to hugyourmoney.com and get a hold of Dr. Frances Rahm. Thank you so much. This was fun.
Thank you, Jess.
All right. We'll be back next week again with another episode of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rahm, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Well, I tried another outfit out of Florida. Their help was to take my money, and you're on your own with problems that we create for you. This, it's different. It makes me more confident. The ads that I have heard on the radio were true. She's honestly truly concerned that people's lives improve by getting a handle on their finances. I actually have more peace about where my finances are going from here. Yeah, it's like light at the end of the tunnel that's not a train coming your way.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.